Now, I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, that famous first line of a song. There are certain secret chord sequences in songs that please many of us, and one is used especially by Taylor Swift. And we shan't head to the lightning fast amassing of scholarship regarding her latest Tortured Poets album and all the men supposedly mentioned and denigrated in it, which we mentioned last week. We did think about trying to find Matty Healy's Aunt Debbie, who's been quoted in the English papers. You know, two sides to every story, but all that news is already old, isn't it? Taylor Swift, though, may hold the record for having songs that use a chord sequence known as the Axis progression. Even before the new album, she had used it 21 times. The Axis progression is named after a very clever trio of Australian comedians known as the Axis of Awesome. It's named after them because of this.
People killing, people dying, children hurt and you hear them crying. Can you practice what you preach? Won't you turn the other cheek? Forever young, I wanna be forever young. I won't hesitate no more, no more. It cannot wait. I'm your lipstick stains on the front lobe of my left side brains. I knew I wouldn't forget you if I could. Then I would, I'd go wherever you will
and
go.
Can you feel the love tonight?
Nobody wants to see us together, but it don't matter, no.
Cause I got Patrick, take me home to the place where I belong.
Papa, Patsy,
I can't live with or without you. Pictures of you, pictures of me, hung upon your wall for the world to see.
So that's the Axis progression in action. And those guys could sing. They could even reach the high note on Take On Me by the band A-ha, which also uses the progression. Taylor Swift employs it on songs like Love Story, All Too Well, I Knew You Were Trouble. The Axis of Awesome in their performances managed to find 80 songs with the same progression in them. Someone else on YouTube has found 450. Sydney Conservatorium of Music lecturer in contemporary music, Dr. J.D. O'Regan, joins us. J.D.'s known as the Doctor of Pop, and she co-authored the book Hooks in Popular Music. Hi, J.D.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
I'm very well, thank you, Doctor of Pop. And I know
thank you.
I know you get called that. The Axis progression. Now, I haven't looked for it on the Tortured Poets Department album, but Taylor Swift likes it a lot, doesn't she?
She does, and a lot of other pop songwriters use that progression too, but Taylor Swift seems to have a specific fondness for it, for sure.
What are the chords used, please? And after that, I'll ask you why people like them so much, but what are the chords?
Oh, this is a good question. So sometimes in order to make sense of chords, we might refer to them by a bunch of numbers. And so the chord progression that Taylor Swift uses is referred to as a 1-5-6-4 progression. And if you were sitting at a piano, I'd be able to kind of show you exactly where that is. But there, if we're in the key of C, which is like the easiest key, I guess, for a piano player, it would be a C, a G, and then an A minor, and then an F. That's the progression. It's just four. It's really familiar. It's really simple, and it works.
And why do we like that progression, do you think?
Well, I think it comes down to its familiarity, right? So we know, even if you're not a musical person, you already know a likeliness of where chords are going to end up, because we've just consumed so much pop music for all of our lives, you know what I mean? So when we start to hear that progression, it has a little bit to do with what they call a cadence, which is like the relationship between one chord to another. So from that 1 to 5, that's a really familiar cadence. We're like, oh, this feels so good. We know where it's going. When it gets to that 6, that A minor, it's like, ooh, some tension, feeling a bit emotional, and then it's resolved down to that F, which is the 4, and we're like, oh, we're back home again. So it sort of has an emotional flow, those 4 chords, and we feel it when we hear it.
Oh, that's well explained. And there are other chord progressions well known to musicians and well used by them too, aren't there?
Yeah, but there have been a number of really famous chord progressions. Like even earlier than pop music, you might have heard of the 12-bar blues, where lots of, you know, blues, early blues songs, electrified blues songs have, you know, this 3 chords over this 12-bar pattern. Super memorable, really defines the style. Another one you might have heard of before is sometimes referred to as the doo-wop progression. It's sometimes called ice cream chords too, which I'm not quite sure why, but maybe because everyone likes them and they're nice. but the doo-wop progression, it defined an entire genre of music, doo-wop music, which is kind of a vocal music of the 40s and 50s. It has a very similar chord progression to the one that we're talking about today. The doo-wop one has a sort of a 1-1-6-2-5, if we want to put the numbers in. And it's a very familiar progression, and oh, we love it. We love it. And it's been in like thousands and thousands of songs. So yeah, songwriters do have some of these tools in their toolkit of progressions that are familiar.
So does the axis progression or any familiar progression instill the same emotion in us? I think you're saying it does, despite whatever the song's doing otherwise, lyrically or instrumentally. I mean, am I feeling the same kind of emotion when I hear Take Me Home Country Roads or Taylor Swift singing Love Story?
That's such a good question. And one of the beautiful things, one of the most amazing things I think about pop music and a good chord progression is that it can be used in so many different ways in terms of the emotional kind of weight behind what the lyrics are doing, right? So, yeah, I think the feeling of Take Me Home Country Roads, or I'm trying to think of some other songs that use this progression too. I think something like Forever Young also has that too. I think the Cranberry Zombie also has it. We've got some pop punk stuff as well. Green Day use it. All of those are very different emotionally, but what a great simple chord progression is able to do is to hold things down while all this exciting stuff happens on top of them, right? So if you had a song that had a really complicated chord progression, a really complicated lyric, you know, some really gymnastic performance in the vocal, we'd be overwhelmed. It's that it would be too much for us to all kind of absorb as a really great pop song. So what a great chord progression does like this is just, let's hold it down while all of this other stuff can be layered over the top. Other things become more important. Like, for example, with Taylor Swift, it's absolutely the way she performs it. It's how she sings it. It's also the kind of autobiographical stuff in the lyrics that's really important. So yeah, that's why it's such a powerful tool in a songwriter's toolkit. It's like a supporting role to the other parts of the song that can be more important.
Okay. And if you think, you know, Taylor Swift's songs sound similar, which people do say, I mean, I'm an admirer of her, not a detractor, but if you think the songs sound similar, you're right, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's totally fine. I mean, she could refer to that as, you know, part of her songwriting style, and that's totally fine. In the same way that she has, you know, lyric themes that she comes back to. I mean, many bands, you know, use those same kinds of, I mean, think of someone like AC/DC, amazing chords, really similar riffs. They're all amazing, very concise, very catchy, but it's a really clear identifiable sound. And I think maybe these chords and the kinds of things Taylor Swift sings and writes about, that's part of her unique sound too, that's really identifiable.
I think people get at her a bit because you don't hear AC/DC criticised or ZZ Top or the people who played it. And you don't hear blues singers criticised for 3 chords either. That's the thing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. And I do think that this is why I love studying like pop music and chart pop. There's so much joy and fun and complexity and like curious stuff that comes out of a lot of top 40 pop music. But I think as academics and even as music critics, it's often kind of written off as being formulaic or not important. Taylor Swift cops it. I also think because her audience is primarily made up of young women. And so, you know, there's some tension there, I think, in the way that her music is discussed. But I do think it's changing. I definitely think it's, you know, I think all of Australia, when she did that, you know, tour here a couple of months ago, you know, there was just a lot of love in a lot of places for Taylor Swift, which is really sweet. Yeah, really sweet to see, and amazing to see a female performer who writes and produces and collaborates on her own songs having so much success. It's like, it's great for young female musicians to look up and go, it's possible.
Yeah, I think you're right about the misogyny applied to the audience. I hadn't really thought of that clearly before, but I'm sure that's true. Listen, JD, you've written about the Beatles, for example, and no one would accuse them of sounding same-same, or Pink Floyd, or, I don't know, Eminem. But the greats, do the greats, what? And she's up there now, of course, but let's leave her aside. Do the greats rely on familiar progressions more than we know?
Yeah, well, I think the deeper you go into an artist's kind of repertoire, you do get to find these cool patterns. That's definitely something I found. So I did my PhD studies on the music of the Beach Boys in the early 1960s, right? So like all the Surf Cars Girls stuff. And when I got in there were 117 songs that I looked at. So there's a lot of songs. And I actually had to sit there and work them all out. And as I was going through, these were all songs I knew really well. But all of a sudden I was finding all of this quirky stuff in there where it's like, oh, it's really odd that Brian Wilson will write a 12-bar blues in A flat, which is an odd key for a piano player, for example. Or it's odd the amount of weird little modulations happen that you wouldn't really know unless you sat there kind of work it out. So I definitely think that, you know, artists that have longevity have this combination between something that's really familiar and identifiable, that's them. So for the Beach Boys, maybe it's like their vocal harmonies. For the Beatles, you know, they all have very unique voices. It might be some of the psychedelic sounds that they really invented during that time. For AC/DC, it's those big, amazing riffs. I think they have a combination of the familiar, but also they're constantly trying to try things that are new, right? So it's sort of, it's this really beautiful balance between the familiar and the novel.
How about Bach, Mozart, and Beethoven?
Well, you might have to talk to some of my colleagues at the conservatorium about that. But again, very catchy songs. They often used certain kinds of, I guess what I would call like a song structure, they were probably called form, that they used depending on the era in which that music was being made. So classical music has a different one to sort of the Romantic period, different to the Baroque period. So yeah, I think every era of music has rules in which they come back to.
Why do you love the Beach Boys so much? I noticed you've got a Beach Boys smile poster on your wall behind you. What? And you did your PhD on them. So what's great about the Beach Boys as far as you're concerned?
Oh, wow. How long have we got, Jim? The more that you know about their history and their story, their music starts to sound very different, you know. So on the outside, you listen to all of those beautiful songs and go, wow, Southern California, I wish I was there. It's sunny and beautiful and there's hot rods and there's surfers and there's girls. It's amazing. But I think once you understand their history, which is that they had a very, especially the Wilson brothers in particular, and Brian Wilson, who wrote, you know, their songs and was their producer, very difficult life, you know. And so when you learn about their history, you start to see that these happy songs were like a fantasy. It was about a life that they weren't able to live, you know, and there's something really bittersweet and so beautiful about them trying to create a world in which people felt welcome and that they felt welcome, even though it wasn't actually their reality. They didn't surf at all. They were terrible. Brian Wilson was quite scared of the water, actually. So yeah, it was sort of, it's like just such an interesting story, you know, and the more I dove into their music, like how, you know, how beautiful it is. We think of a song like, I don't know, God Only Knows. It's like so resonant to so many people, such a simple sentiment, but the way it's executed is just so, so beautiful. Yeah, there's just so many layers. I love talking about them. Thanks for asking about them.
No, you're welcome. Yeah, God Only Knows is held up as one of the great songs of the pop era now, isn't it?
That's it
the
is. Thing. Yeah. What's interesting about a song like that, actually it has quite complicated chords, and it's also kind of unsure what key it's in. Sometimes it feels like it's E, sometimes it feels like it's A. And the point of that, you don't have to be a musician to understand what that means, but the point of that is that there's like this lack of resolution. There's sort of a restlessness about that song because it is about wondering. It is about thinking, you know, what would my life be without this person? And so the chords like paint the emotional quality of those lyrics so beautifully. And I think that's part of why people really love that song.
I'm going to play it for you. Not that you'll
Yay!
Pick it up probably, but I'll play that because you've described that so nicely as well. Hey,
thank you.
Great to talk to you. Are you a Swiftie? I mean, how highly do you rate Taylor?
I'm probably not a hardcore Swiftie, but I kind of love what she does, and I love that she's inspired a whole bunch of music fans. In a world where music is increasingly in competition with all the distractions we have in modern life, to have someone like Taylor Swift step in and actually make people in love with going to see live music, making crafts together, making friends, like that's all the beautiful community stuff that music can do. So it's really exciting to see that happening with Taylor Swift. And God, there's so many good pop songs. I wrote a book that came out with my colleague Tim Byron last year about pop hooks, and Taylor Swift was one of the most referred to songwriters in the book. We referred to Shake It Off, and I think Blank Space were the two ones we referred to the most. So yeah, she's a great pop songwriter.
I knew about your book. How's your music career going? Because I understand you write quite unusual songs and perform them.
Yeah, by unusual, I guess I mean kind of awkward and like an awkward nerd that I am. But yeah, so I do some of my own stuff. I play on other people's records too. I also have a fun party band with a bunch of my friends. We've got a 12-piece yacht rock band. So if you're in Sydney and you want to come, if you're in New Zealand and you're visiting Sydney, come and get on the boat with us if you want to listen to some Steely Dan or the Doobie Brothers. So also great songs too.
I've never heard of yacht rock. That's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'll be our next chat, Jim. I'll tell you what yacht rock is.
Hey, JD, great to talk with you. So nice of you to give us a conversation. Thank you.
And you. Thanks for having me.